Hollywood Homicide Uncovered is part of the Dark Hollywood Collection in the Reels files on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Be sure to subscribe for new episodes each Thursday. Then go to Reels.com, check the top of the screen, and enter your zip code to find out how you can watch more chilling cases like this when you watch TV. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com for the dark crime series and specials you'll find only on Reels Channel.
I'm just trying to keep you laughing, baby. That's my job.
He was a comedian with an instantly recognizable face and voice.
He could play pompous and smarmy, yet you still liked him.
She was his beautiful wife, searching for fame.
Bryn had moderate success in Los Angeles, struggling to get any kind of acting.
Stardom quickly finds the funny man as he joins the ranks of the biggest shows on primetime TV.
Saturday Night Live launched him into the lead of news radio, and it was very successful.
But Phil's seemingly perfect family life was secretly complicated.
Phil's marriage is a mess. Bryn was volatile. She had already gone through rehab.
And an old flame resurfaces.
There was a third person, and that caught her attention.
All leading to two bodies found under suspicious circumstances.
There was an individual that came out of the house holding a plastic bag with a gun in it.
And it's up to a determined detective to separate the truth from the drama.
We were there for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to find out the truth.
Who killed Phil Hartman? May 28th, 1998. All appears quiet in the tranquil city of Encino, California. But in the home of famed comedian and Saturday Night Live alumnus Phil Hartman, something is horribly wrong. LAPD homicide detective Tom Brasha surveys the grisly crime scene and tries to piece together what happened just hours before.
The police get a 911 call.
A man's been shot. I think he might be dead.
The shooter is still in the house. You don't think of things like that in upscale Encino. Police call the house, and they get a woman on the line.
Hello?
The woman is distraught and incoherent.
They don't get the answers they need, and eventually the call just ends.
As police gather, a man and a small child exit the house with their hands up.
Is there anybody still in the house right now?
Yeah.
Anyone else?
The man tells police the shooter is still inside.
We need backup right now.
The police need a plan to get inside.
A killer lurks in Phil Hartman's house. Officer Daniel Carnahan of the LAPD commands a highly trained task force. His job is to defuse the crisis and hunt down a gunman.
They have to save the victim, they have to get the shooter, they have to protect themselves, and there may be kids in the house, they don't know.
I mean, come on.
They then enter the house very carefully, checking room by room.
LAPD, anyone here? LAPD, is anybody home?
Now they have to figure out what's going on with the shooter. The police are going down the hallway. They have to now go room to room and clear the house to make sure that there are no other shooters. They get to a door that appears to be locked.
This is the LAPD!
On the other side, they can hear a woman crying.
But who is the woman? And who else is in there with her?
The yell, nobody's answering.
It's the police, open up! Ma'am, hello?
A shot rings out. The crisis escalates. Then the cops storm into the bedroom. It is a grisly scene. They see a man lying on the bed, bloodied and dead. Right next to him, a woman, her head slumped against the pillow, her head bloodied.
The officer surveys the room and wonders if the killer escaped.
Carnahan to dispatch. I have two victims here.
It's up to Detective Tom Brasha to catch the killer.
Since it was a very high-profile case, we were there for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to find out the truth.
A comedic legend, a husband, and a father of two has been shot to death in his home. But why?
Phil Hartman was a funny guy. He was a pretty talented man, and I think they recognized that in him fairly early on. He was a graphic artist. He worked with his brother in the music industry, so he was sort of around show business from an early age. Well-loved, well-liked by everyone who worked with him. Everyone's really fond of Phil. He wasn't the kind of guy that would make waves. He was sort of a guy that just wanted everybody to do well around him.
Determined to make it in comedy, Phil worked on his own material and honed his impersonations.
Phil wanted to fit in, but also stand out. That's what a performer does. And improv is one of the most complicated, difficult sort of talents you could possibly have. You just need a razor-sharp mind to be able to go with the flow like that. And I think most of Phil's energy came on stage with him.
And the most coveted spot for any improv actor was the stage of Saturday Night Live, where he performed alongside Adam Sandler, Chris Farley, and Mike Myers.
Saturday Night Live put Phil Hartman on the map as far as the world is concerned.
It was Hartman's distinctive voice and comedic timing that snagged him a starring role on the sitcom News Radio, where his performance garnered him an Emmy nomination. Police find Hartman lying dead next to his 40-year-old wife, Bryn.
Phil Hartman was on the brink of stardom when he met Bryn, and she was a bikini model, and they were introduced, and she was gorgeous and sexy and vivacious, and by all accounts, Phil was head over heels in love as soon as he met her. Phil Hartman was getting older. He was ready to settle down, really, and this was very much part of the plan when he met Bryn. Bryn was originally Vicky Jo Omdahl. She was born and raised in Minnesota, and she was one of those prettiest girls at the high school, and she kicked around modeling a little bit in Minnesota, and like so many people, came out to Los Angeles, changed her name from Vicky Jo to Bryn, and tried to make it as an actress and a model. Bryn had moderate success as a model in Los Angeles. She was modeling bikinis, doing a little bit of other work, struggling to get any kind of acting. Phil Hartman is a very famous television personality, and I'm sure she's hoping that he could open some doors to her.
Phil and Bryn are married in November 1987. They have two children, a son Sean, born in 1989, and a daughter Bergen in 1992.
The acting never takes off for her, and she's mostly a stay-at-home mom with her kids.
Now, both the children's parents are dead. 9-year-old Sean and 6-year-old Bergen are safely removed from the Hartman home. Neighbors and family members rush to their side while police focus on catching the killer. LAPD homicide detective Tom Brasha takes the lead on the case.
My partner and I, who were assigned to Robbery Homicide Division, and the function of Robbery Homicide Division is to handle cases that are either high profile, driven by the media, or require a lot of resources to handle. Since it was a very high-profile case, my boss contacted me, and my partner and I were assigned as the lead investigators.
First responders tell Brasha this could be a murder-suicide, but the crime scene has Brasha puzzled.
This home was, I remember, a family home, a very comfortable home. I remember that there was a tray of muffins, the bowl of fruit, and family photos all throughout the house. You just felt relaxed. You could actually feel the love in the home. So it was very interesting. That made a mark on me.
But all is not what it seems at the Hartman house. Just moments ago, this was the site of an armed standoff, and two people are dead in the master bedroom.
The master bedroom was on the very north side of the home. The bedroom was similar to the rest of the house, two nightstands, on either side of the bed. They each had their own phones on either side of the bed, I remember that. And magazines, books, just a normal-looking bedroom.
Detective Brasha looks for clues to what happened here in the hours before.
You tend to work backwards. We have to look at the crime scene and say, what is it telling us? You know, what can we learn from it? What I saw was Bryn on the bed, as was Phil. Phil was interesting to me. He was just wearing a T-shirt, a pair of boxers. He was in a position where he looked like he was just sound asleep. And I saw three gunshot wounds on him. He had a gunshot wound to his right to the middle of his forehead, a gunshot wound on his neck, and then a gunshot wound to his right forearm. Bryn was in a supine position. She was on her back, propped up on a couple of pillows. I could see soot and stippling around the lips and the mouth area, which would indicate to me that, you know, somebody probably, you know, shot, you know, a weapon into her mouth.
If this is a murder-suicide, the evidence should prove it.
What I didn't see and what I expected to see, the gun wasn't in Bryn Hartman's hand. Okay, so that was puzzling to me.
If this isn't a murder-suicide, then it's the scene of a double homicide. But who would kill Phil and Bryn, and why? Encino, a swank neighborhood nestled in the Hollywood Hills. Some of entertainment's biggest stars have called it home. It's an unlikely place for the LAPD to be called to a brutal double murder. But after responding to a frantic emergency call, they find Phil Hartman, a beloved Saturday Night Live cast member, and his wife Bryn, dead in their mansion. And the lead investigator, Tom Brasha, is tasked with finding out exactly what happened. Television news crews rush to Phil Hartman's home.
It became a media circus. All of this happened overnight, and by morning, Encino was swarming with reporters and TV crews. Nobody could believe it, that a guy as amiable, nice, respected, loved as Phil Hartman could end up being murdered in his own house, and then that his wife was also dead.
Hartman may be best known for his performances on Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live put Phil Hartman on the map as far as the world is concerned.
Phil Hartman joined Saturday Night Live at kind of an ebb in the success of the show. He, along with Dana Carvey and some others, sort of injected new life into Saturday Night Live, and it was a rebirth of the show.
Phil Hartman's speciality on Saturday Night Live was sort of impersonating people with really dignified, like Sinatra or like Bill Clinton or something. He would perform these really dignified people and with a rather undignified dialogue.
Phil Hartman was a regular on the show. He did some very, very funny characters on the show, but I think he was best known on the show behind the scenes as a writer. Saturday Night Live is a comedy troupe of very big, volatile personalities, and it requires at least one person to be the rock, one person to be the adult in the room. And the other castmates called him the glue, held everything together, and probably one of the main reasons why that show had renewed success.
In 1998, Phil Hartman's career is at its pinnacle. Then it ends in tragedy. Word of Hartman's murder hits the newswire and puts pressure on LAPD lead investigator Tom Brasha to solve the case.
It's important to handle any investigation, but especially one that's high profile, as efficiently as possible, so we don't leave any stone unturned. People are going to question every aspect of our investigation, right? They're going to become the detectives, and they'll question what we do.
Back at the crime scene, Brasha isn't certain whether he's investigating a murder-suicide or a double homicide. And like the media, he has questions of his own.
Police!
First responders believe Bryn Hartman shot herself moments before police entered the bedroom. But Brasha isn't convinced.
On the surface, it seemed like a homicide and a suicide. But there was one curve in there.
Murder-suicides usually have telltale signs, so Brasha and his team look for them.
If there's an argument, are there signs of an argument? Is there any physical signs of an argument? Or like you would normally see when, you know, somebody would be throwing something across the room or something would be turned over. But we saw nothing. No lamps were turned over, no footstools turned over, no evidence that there was any type of physical altercation at the home.
Even the look on Phil's face suggests there was no conflict in the moments leading to murder.
When I looked at Phil, I got the impression that he was having a nice dream, and he was sound asleep. He had this very serene look on his face, like he was in a nice dreamland.
So far, there's no evidence to prove this was a murder-suicide, so Brasha looks for more clues.
We have a team of investigators that go inside the home, and we photograph, and we measure, and we look, and we try to figure out from the physical evidence that we have if we can determine what occurred. What is a crime scene telling us? One of the things that we saw is multiple cans of beer, and they were open and empty. How long had that can been there? Was it freshly drank, or had it been there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Smelled fresh, like somebody had recently drank the beer. And there was one in the living room, like on a coffee table. There was one in the laundry room next to like a recycle bin. And so I thought that odd, you know, I mean, it's just a little bit different. That usually if you're going to sit down with friends and drink beer, it's going to be one location, like on the coffee table or the kitchen table, something like that, not scattered around the house. And we had them fingerprinted.
Brasha also finds something interesting in Bryn Hartman's nightstand.
Saw a lot of prescription drugs. Funny, nothing in the name of Phil Hartman. All in the name of Bryn.
And there's something else that catches Brasha's attention.
Saw firearm-related, you know, type things. There were weapons in the house.
But at least one weapon isn't where Brasha expects to find it.
The gun wasn't in Bryn Hartman's hand.
A gun is on the dresser, and the cartridge has been fired. If Bryn killed herself, why isn't the murder weapon in her hand?
So that was puzzling to me.
And there's one more thing that troubles Detective Brasha.
And that was this individual named Ron Douglas.
Ron Douglas is the man who called 911 and was already at the scene when the police arrived.
Were you briefed that?
Did you know you can stream real Stark Hollywood programs like this on Roku, Fire TV, and Amazon channels? Well, you can. Just download the Reels app to subscribe. Or check out Reels on Tubi, Samsung TV Plus, Vizio, and Zumo. Hollywood Homicide Uncovered comes from the Dark Hollywood fans at Reels channel. To find Reels in your area, go to Reels.com. That's Reels.com. Check the top of your screen, enter your zip code, and begin enjoying great TV.
There was an individual that came out of the house holding Sean, who was not a family member. People at the time didn't even know who he was. Holding Sean, had a plastic bag with a gun in it. And so that got our attention. The officers actually recovered the gun and put that individual to the side and had him stay. But right away, it's like, why is there somebody coming out of this house with a gun in a bag? That really caught our attention. We learned through our investigation that Bryn and Ron had known each other for quite a few years. I think upwards up to like 15 years. Before that Bryn and Phil even knew each other. They had a relationship years ago. Since completely cut off.
Had Ron Douglas and Bryn Hartman actually cut off their romance?
Wait.
Or did a love triangle lead to murder?
We had to find out if Ron Douglas had anything to do with this.
Want to tell me what happened?
Did Ron Douglas kill Phil Hartman?
In May of 1998, there's one question on the mind of everyone in Hollywood. Who killed legendary Saturday Night Live comedian Phil Hartman and his wife Brynn? LAPD homicide detective Tom Brasha detains Brynn Hartman's former lover, Ron Douglas. He's both a witness and a prime suspect.
At a homicide-suicide scene, there's usually only two people there. In this particular case, there was a third person. And that caught our attention. Does Ron Douglas have a motive to kill Phil Hartman? When my partner and I had finished out the crime scene, we went out to interview Ron.
Ron!
We didn't soft-shoe it at all.
Want to tell me what happened?
We were there for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to find out the truth.
I get what it looks like, and I know I can't have proof or anything. You just have to listen to what I have to say.
Come on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And we weren't leaving that room until we found out the truth.
When was the last time you saw her?
Okay, so...
And Ron tells an interesting story. He claims that there was a message on his recorder from Brynn asking him to come over and visit. Okay, and she does show up to his house.
Yeah, I get it.
And he describes her as being in a pretty good mood. They just had a good conversation for like two and a half hours.
Listen, you'll always be beautiful in my eyes.
And he said she left the house, and everything was good in good order.
But Ron and Brynn's day is far from over.
Ron gets a call, and it's Brynn.
Hello?
Now she's crying, upset, and she says, I need to come back over to your house.
I need you help.
And Ron says, no, you can't come over.
I don't have time for this.
About 20 minutes later, he hears banging on his door, and he sees that it's Brynn. He said she smells like a brewery. She's obviously intoxicated, and he's having a hard time even communicating to her. And she says,
I killed Phil.
I killed Phil. Of course, he doesn't believe it.
Brynn, you're drunk. None of this happened, okay?
I killed her.
But... You know, she's so hysterical that he just continues to try to talk to her. She's trying to, like, go to sleep, and he's trying to keep her awake. She goes to the bathroom and vomits a couple of times. And it's really quite the scene. And at one point, she's fumbling through her purse, and a gun falls out of her purse.
Brynn, you got to be kidding me.
And she says, you see, I told you, I killed him.
According to Douglas, Brynn admits to killing her husband.
How am I supposed to believe her? She was drunk.
He still doesn't believe her.
Brynn, you've been drinking a lot, okay? You've probably seen a lot of things.
He feeds her hot tea and water, and he's just trying to sober her up. And he feels that she's sober enough to drive home, and he wants her out of the house. She won't leave unless he goes with her. She says, take the gun. He does. He goes back, takes the gun, he puts it in a plastic bag. And she gets in her car, and she drives away. He goes into his garage, he's a few minutes behind her, gets his car out to follow her. She eventually gets home and goes in the house. Ron follows her in. And that's when Ron sees that Phil is dead in the bed. He goes to the phone and he calls 911 right away.
A man's been shot. I think he might be dead.
Is Ron Douglas telling the truth? Brasha wonders if perhaps Douglas and Brynn are more than just friends.
When was the last time you were intimate with her, Ron?
I can't even remember.
Definitely not in the last 24 hours.
No.
And the interview took several hours. We've been known to have pretty good stamina when it comes to interviews and interrogations.
Did you and Brent ever fight?
We had arguments, but friends have arguments sometimes. She was really messed up. I've never seen her like that before.
And we knew that sometimes it took a lot of time, because if Ron had this deep, dark secret, he's not really inclined to tell a couple perfect strangers what that secret is.
We just have to run a few tests, run a few things, and I'll be back in touch, okay?
Yeah.
Ron Douglas's story sounds believable, but Brasha needs time to investigate and make sure his story checks out.
We went out and we verified a lot of the points. And one of the things that we did was phone records and to establish timelines as to what happened. And in fact, we corroborated the fact that at what time Ron said he made contact with Bryn was actually reflected on her phone record. We interviewed his neighbors to see if they heard anything or see anything, which in fact corroborated what he was telling us. And we have a neighbor that actually can time Bryn when she pulled up and then when they left.
More and more evidence suggests this was in fact a murder-suicide.
But one of the things that my partner and I asked the coroner to do was do a sexual assault kit, just to see if there was any evidence, that there was any sex involved somewhere. Ron denied having any type of sexual relations with her once he had cut off their relationship. That was one of the reasons we also did the sexual assault kit, to try to verify what he was saying.
Wait.
Or if we found evidence, that those two had sex, then we knew that Ron was lying to us. And it came back completely negative.
Autopsy reports further confirm Detective Brasha's suspicions.
Bryn Hartman had an injury inside of her mouth, gunshot wound to the mouth, and then an exit wound at the top of her head. The wound suggested a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
And only Bryn's fingerprints were found on the gun lying on the dresser. Ron's were not.
We did resolve the issue with Ron Douglas. Ron Douglas had nothing to do with the murder of Phil Hartman. Simple. He did not. That relieved a lot of concern for us. Being detectives, we just wanted to make sure to try to get as much of the truth as we could.
The question surrounding the two guns is also resolved.
From the very beginning, Phil Hartman was a gun enthusiast. Always had guns. And for Bryn's 40th birthday, he gave her a pistol. They actually went shooting together. She was very familiar with how to use a firearm.
Ballistics testing proves that Bryn shot her husband with the gun Ron Douglas carried in the plastic bag, and then shot herself with the second gun. Brasha also learns why the gun wasn't in Bryn's hand after her suicide.
We did get to the bottom of that. When the officer went for the room, his natural reaction was disarm the suspect, because I don't know if she's dead or not. So out of abundance of caution, he removed it from her hand and set it over on the dresser off to the side, which is where it was at. So it was explainable. We like our crime scenes pristine as much as possible. But having been a detective for a long time, that's also a fallacy. There's always something that's going to be disturbed. It's our job to figure it out.
All the evidence now points to murder-suicide. But Brasha still has to answer other pressing questions.
But then still there's a question, what happened then? What caused Bryn to do this? Why did Bryn Hartman kill her husband?
On May 28, 1998, Saturday Night Live comedy superstar Phil Hartman and his wife Bryn are found dead in their bed. And LAPD homicide detective Tom Brasha knows who did it.
We learned through our investigation that Bryn killed her husband before she committed suicide.
But one key question still remains.
Why did Bryn Hartman kill kill her husband. As a homicide detective, the why question can be the hardest question to answer.
To find out why Brynn killed, Brasha needs to know precisely what happened in the lead-up to the murder.
One of the things we try to do as a homicide detective is create a timeline.
To do that, he needs a witness. Anyone who saw Phil or Brynn on the day of the murder. Detective Brasha brings in the Hartman's nanny, Lorraine, for questioning.
She told us, you know, certain things. She told us, because she was home when Brynn was there, Phil had gone for the day. Phil was supposed to be home at a certain time and was not.
Hey. I was, the boat.
And we got home. Sorry. Phil was home for a little bit of time.
2 hours.
Well, this is okay. You should calm down, quiet. Don't I don't want to be in front of the kid.
And then told Brynn that he was going to go to the airport.
I'm going to go to the hangar, if that's okay with you. Is that okay?
He maintained a small aircraft at the Van Nuys Airport, and he said he was going to go there to his aircraft, be gone about an hour. Brynn, I guess, just made called her friends. Well, then I'm leaving. I'm going to go with my friend.
You do whatever you need to do. All right.
So it wasn't like a direct argument, but you could feel like there was some tension only because Phil maybe wasn't as responsive to being home as Brynn thought he should be.
I keep working on it.
Yeah.
Hi.
As far as our investigation revealed, there wasn't anything really out of the ordinary, you know, from talking to the nanny. There was nothing really there.
How did a tiny disagreement somehow escalate to murder? The nanny stays with the children while the husband and wife each go out separately.
And when Phil got home, Phil and the nanny talked a little bit. As the nanny was leaving, she saw that Phil had grabbed the two kids and they were having a great time.
So far, nothing about that day points to murder.
The nanny paints for police this very charming, happy scene. He's at the peak of his wealth. He's comfortable in his career, comfortable with himself. After all these years of show business, he's finally got everything that he's wanted, his kids and his home and his career. A lot of contentment. Everything's going perfectly.
On the day of his murder, Hartman seems to have it all. He's a happy father and one of TV's most famous comedians.
After Saturday Night Live, Phil moved on to news radio, which was a huge show. And that Saturday Night Live sort of launched him into being the lead of this sitcom. And it was very successful.
And he plays a very familiar Phil Hartman character, kind of a pompous, uptight guy. Phil had this famous, booming baritone voice. So he would play the consummate news radio anchor. There was something about Phil Hartman. He could play pompous and smarmy, yet you still liked him.
Everything's going Phil Hartman's way. He has the comedy world in the palm of his hand. But there's one aspect of Hartman's life that's not working out.
His marriage is a mess.
Brasha learns that Hartman's wife, Brynn, is deeply unhappy and fighting personal demons.
From the very beginning, Brynn was volatile. Unpredictable. Phil knew all this, and she had already gone through rehab for booze and cocaine before they even met. But they got married anyway, and her problems just got worse. As Phil Hartman gets more famous, and as Brynn finds herself a stay-at-home mom, there's a lot of resentment building within her. Brynn is a wannabe actress model, and she's pushing 40. And that's just, unfortunately, in Hollywood, very, very difficult to make it. And I think she's seen all of her dreams as a young girl in Minnesota dying.
Don't even bring the kids into this. This is about me and you.
And finding herself as the wife of a very famous man stuck in an unhappy marriage. Brynn and Phil's sex life had completely ended, and she was angry and hurt, and she was hurling all kinds of accusations at him. And it gets to the point that she is so jealous that she would fly off the handle just over fan mail.
And where are you? Off flitting fan mail, Phil.
Very suspicious, constantly suspecting that he's having affairs, and just really resentful.
Excuse me for making mistakes sometimes, because we all know Phil never does.
They had very different personalities. Now, Brynn was huge, and she wanted to yell and scream and really resolve this thing. And Phil was more reserved.
It's about me and you. Of course it is.
Yeah. Well, what is it?
So, of course, this just got her even angrier. She felt like she couldn't get through to him. And it was just this combustible, volatile mix.
But none of these elements on their own is enough of a motive for murder. Brasha keeps building a timeline to find out what caused Brynn to kill.
We did interview the girlfriend that met Brynn at Buca di Beppo.
After Phil went to his airplane hangar, Brynn went for drinks with her friend Christine Zander, a producer with Third Rock from the Sun.
They were in the lounge and they had cocktails. If I remember right, they were drinking Cosmopolitans. She was frustrated with her life. She was turning 40, and she didn't feel like she had accomplished anything in her life. She was trying to write a screenplay and get somebody to buy that, and she couldn't.
Brynn is telling Christine that the marriage is in trouble, has been in trouble for a while, that they're constantly arguing. But this is not a very volatile or horrible situation. This is just two girlfriends kind of commiserating, you know, about Brynn's problems.
On the surface, Brynn's just out for a bit of socializing, but there's actually much more going on.
Brynn, who's been in rehab at least twice, is now drinking again. Had a couple of beers at home, putting down some Cosmos at the restaurant, and indications are that she did some cocaine.
Zander tells Brasha she believes Brynn was using cocaine that day.
She did know from past experience that when she drank alcohol, she also liked to use cocaine.
According to Zander, Brynn offered her cocaine while they were out for drinks, but Zander declined. When Zander mentions cocaine, Brasha remembers something Ron Douglas told him.
Ron said Phil had confronted her on it and said if she started using cocaine again, that he would leave her.
Detective Brasha learns that a month or so before the murder, Phil had threatened to leave Brynn if she didn't sober up.
You will not take my children from me, Phil. Do not threaten me with taking my children from me. What is wrong with you?
Brynn has a problem. She relies on Phil for money, for her well-being, for her stability. And she knows that if her booze and drug problem gets even worse, she's going to lose the house, she's going to lose her marriage, and worse, she's going to lose her kids.
And so that seemed to be, you know, ring true to us and be consistent with what probably happened that night.
But are some drugs and a troubled marriage enough to push a woman to murder? Famed Saturday Night Live and news radio comedian Phil Hartman and his wife Brynn are found shot to death in their bed. After a high-pressure investigation, Detective Brasha finally has a clear picture of what happened the day of the murder.
After drinks with Christine at the Italian restaurant, Brynn goes to an old friend's house, Ron Douglas.
She does show up to his house. And he describes her as being in a pretty good mood.
We've had hard times, just as everybody else has.
She's obviously been drinking, and it's more of the same. These complaints about her marriage and all these problems. You know, you really get the sense that Ron's heard all this before and just doesn't want to hear it again, and just says, you know, why don't you go home?
Hi, sweetie.
I think it seems logical that some kind of an argument ensued. Here comes Brynn home, drunk again, maybe even high.
I can smell the alcohol on your breath.
Here's Phil trying to get some sleep.
Oh, God, come on.
It's possible that that small argument from earlier in the day erupted into a much worse argument.
I had a couple of drinks. I'm not drunk.
Oh, certainly my God. Looked drunk.
Frequently, they argued about her drinking and her drug taking. He had already threatened to take away the kids. So it's certainly possible that he did it again.
I'll leave you. I will leave you, and I will take away the kids.
You will not take away my children.
Oh, I will.
You will not take away my children!
All of these emotions are beating Brynn. Her anger, her resentment, her jealousy.
I'm not dealing with you like this.
You won't continue with that confrontation, that he will back away. And I believe that's what he did. And he went to sleep.
This would leave Brynn just stewing. She felt like he was withdrawing from her, and he just would not deal with this stuff.
My belief is that Brynn just stewed in it. Because she knew that she'd taken the cocaine, and she knew she'd drink the alcohol, and she probably knew that she was slipping back away from, you know, where she should be and wanted to be. She knew she was putting her marriage into jeopardy. And to her world was crumbling. And I think at some point made a split-second irrational decision. And she took out those guns. And pulled the trigger. He was having a nice dream, and he was sound asleep. I believe the first shot was the one to the center of his forehead. That was obviously a fatal shot, and coroner says it was a fatal shot. In my personal opinion, with my years on the job and my experience as a detective, he never knew what happened.
After killing Phil, Brynn goes back to Ron Douglas's house in a panic. And a few hours later, Brynn returns to the master bedroom, gets into bed next to her husband, and kills herself. The facts of the case are clear, but something is still off for Detective Tom Brasha.
It just didn't quite sit. Like, you know, what actually set her over that hump, right? Because she used cocaine in the past. She drank in the past. We all have arguments, right? So what was the difference maker?
Months after the murder, Brasha gets a surprising call.
And my partner and I received a phone call really out of the blue. And it was from a doctor out of Colorado who told me that there's an antidepressant on the market that can be highly effective, but in some people, when they first start using the drug, they have either homicidal or suicidal tendencies. And so at that point, we contacted the coroner's office and said, could you test for that? And sure enough, Brynn had that antidepressant in her system.
Did a cocktail of booze, coke, and antidepressants launch Brynn Hartman into a psychotic episode?
And that was something I thought, that might have been it. I don't know for sure. But that could have been it. That could have been the one thing that pushed you right over the edge.
In the wake of the murder-suicide, Brynn Hartman's family files a wrongful death suit against Brynn's psychiatrist and the pharmaceutical company. The suit alleges that Brynn's psychiatrist didn't warn her of the antidepressant's potential violent side effects. A settlement is reached out of court. The settlement helps Sean and Bergen live in a world without their parents to provide for them.
It's not going to bring back the parents of these kids, but it's something.
For most, Brynn Hartman is remembered as a decent person and a good mother.
I don't have any indication that Brynn Hartman was a bad person. I don't think that she was. She was going through a bad time in her life, and she didn't reach out maybe to the people that she should have reached out to, and it cost her and her family and everybody in their lives dearly to this day.
In spite of the tragic loss, Brasha takes some comfort in having solved the case.
As a homicide detective, we try to recreate what happened and to just make so things make sense to us. And ultimately, we're just trying to find out the truth, wherever it leads us.
Phil Hartman's family, friends, and fans remember him as a good man with a big heart.
You would be hard-pressed in an industry known for backstabbing and bad-mouthing all this to find a single person who ever had a bad thing to say about Phil Hartman. Everybody loved him. Everybody loved him.
Hollywood Homicide Uncovered comes from the Dark Hollywood Collection at Reels Channel. To get more like this when you watch TV, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen and enter your zip code to find us on your system. You'll also find extras from the latest real crime programs that are only on Reels. Find Hollywood Homicide Uncovered and its companions on Roku and Fire TV, too.